Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome back to the Mark Fraley Podcast. Today is Thursday, February 21, 2019. It started out as a sunny day here in Nashville, but it is now clouding up and we expect more rain tonight. We are blessed here in Nashville with a terrific local park and recreation agency. We have abundant and beautiful parks, vibrant recreation centers, recreation program opportunities to suit every taste. This doesn't happen just by chance. Even going back to the early Nashville times and times before metropolitan government, civic leaders have always seen the importance of parks and recreation activities. In the modern era, we've had a succession of mayors who have truly cared about parks. And as the county has grown, the parks and recreation system has grown with it. One of the people who has played a leading role in the Nashville park and recreation system over the past 30 years is my guest today, Tommy Lynch. Tommy has recently retired from his position as director of parks and recreation in Nashville. Tommy has been recognized by the Tennessee Recreation and Parks Association with the prestigious Fellow Award. And so I hope you'll enjoy my chat with Tommy about his life and times as a park and recreation leader here in Nashville. Tommy Lynch, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
I'm really thrilled to have you out. You know, we had a little sun earlier today, but now it's starting to cloud over. I hope we don't get six more days of rain
like we just had. Let me tell you, I live in Bellevue, and when the 2010 flood hit, my daughter was graduating from UTC, and I was on my way there. And I couldn't get back to my home for 5 days.
Oh, gee.
And yesterday I was looking at the river and knowing the forecast is coming, and it's still rising even though it hasn't rained since yesterday.
Yes, exactly. I'm worried about downtown, but I think we'll be okay. Tommy, I want to spend some time with you talking about your career in parks and recreation. And you and I have known each other for over 30 years, yeah. I know. My audience doesn't know you, though. Some will, of course, from Nashville people will. But tell us about your growing up and all that sort of thing.
Well, I from Nashville, native Nashvillean, lived here all my life. I went to Father Ryan High School. One of the things that I think made me most proud about going to Father Ryan is Father Ryan's involvement with integration in Nashville, particularly in sports. I was a basketball and baseball player at Father Ryan, and my brother was a teammate with Willie Brown, who was Jackie Robinson of Tennessee high school athletics. He was the first African American that played any competitive sport in the TSSAA. He played basketball for Ryan. And the next year, when my freshman year at Father Ryan, is when Father Ryan and Pearl played the first game with an integrated basketball team with a predominantly black basketball team in the South. And they had 10,000 people almost at the Municipal Auditorium.
I've read about that game.
Yeah,
That's a famous game.
It was listed as the game that changed the South.
And then you had sort of a standout career as a basketball player.
Yeah, we had a good team. My class was really good. I made all district and second team all city and had the opportunity to play basketball and baseball in college. But my life sort of went from the high point as a high school graduate, president of my class, in the honors class and the math club, et cetera, to had an incident. My dad died my junior year. And when I was making my own decisions, when they tell you that if they're 21, they're mature, I don't know if I could say when I was 21, I was very mature. Made a series of bad decisions, but my bad decisions sent me in the direction of working, requesting a full-time job working in the community centers with the Parks Department.
Okay.
And in 1971, I started full-time with the Parks Department. I would ride to MTSU to Murfreesboro every day, go to school, come back, work from 2 to 10 at the community center. And for the first year, I was driving back to Murfreesboro and living in my fraternity house.
I got you.
And after that, I just decided I just need to stay home and drive back and forth to Murfreesboro.
And what did you study at MTSU?
Political science.
Okay.
Was my major. I had a minor in history and sociology.
Okay.
Because of them being all in social sciences, I had enough electorate classes that in math, business, and in recreation to almost have a distributive manner.
Got you. Now, you come from a big family. You're
family of five.
And you have at least one brother who has been in public service.
Yeah, my brother Billy has at times been the fire chief of Nashville.
He was the
director of public works for a while.
Right.
And he was also the director of human resources for a while. So he had the same, in actuality, when I retired, I made it a point of working 3 months longer than he did. And it was just, you know, that competitive nature that we all had coming from sports. He had more director's jobs. I only had the one director job,
right.
But I beat him in the amount of years.
Well, that's fun. So you started working in Parks and Recreation. And I presume that was during the Spears administration, or was it before Charlie Spears?
You know, when I went full-time, Mr. Spears was the director.
Right.
But I worked in the summertime in 67 and 68.
Okay.
And there was a changeover at that time. Bert Elmore had been the full-time director. Oh, man, and there was an interim director
okay.
at the time.
Okay.
So
nobody that I knew.
When Charlie Spears came, it was when I was full time.
Got you. And what was your initial work there in the which community center?
Well,
and
what
did you do?
Kirkpatrick Community Center. It's over in East Nashville by the James A. Casey Homes.
Okay.
I started out there as a rec leader. We had a position was called senior recreation leader at the time. I got promoted. It was a little bump. I got promoted to that. Then the next year, I got promoted to the community center director.
Of that particular center?
Yes.
Okay.
I stayed.
Right.
It was so happened the people in front of me working with me, my coworkers, got promoted. A fellow named Lonnie Reynolds left. He graduated from school. He was the senior rec. I got promoted to his position. And then a lady named Eleanor Manning.
Remember Eleanor?
Promoted to one of the first district supervisor jobs with Metro, with Parks Department. They created we were expanding community centers, and so they had to expand the supervisory aspect as well.
Okay. Well, you worked your way up through the ranks.
Yep.
And I recall that you were assistant superintendent for recreation services at one point?
Well, in between, I was the assistant sports supervisor.
Okay.
I came into the central office. We ran flag football, volleyball, some soccer, a lot of softball and baseball at the time. I think
of all ages, adults and,
yes,
and kids.
Kids.
Right.
And at the time, we had over 2,000 adult teams spread out through the city. The Nashville was the only one that had the fields that could be played with the competitive players.
Right.
And you know, there wasn't much going on from the ball field standpoint in Hendersonville and Williamson County and other places. Moving forward, 40 years, some odd years, there's so much being done in the other areas of around Nashville that softball and things like that have shifted away from Nashville.
Not as much emphasis
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. We talked about Charlie Spears just for a moment there, but you know, he figured really prominently in Parks and Rec in He was here for only a very short time, really, comparatively. But he,
compared to Jim Fike and Tommy Lynch and Mary Wary, he was there for an extremely short time. But he brought an emphasis on revenue producing.
Right.
And with Jim Fike, that was his expertise,
right,
really. And Jim was an accountant as well. But we added the Ice Centennial, which was our original ice rink. It was in Centennial Park next to the tennis center at the time.
Right. Been torn down since.
Been torn down.
And replaced with a new facility.
Yeah.
Right.
It was replaced with the Centennial Sportsplex.
Right.
But he started the Ice Centennial, Wave Country, and Hamilton Creek Sailboat Marina all in the same year. And they were all under special services. At that time, when he was getting these going, had been moved to being in charge of all the swimming pools for the city in recreation. Charlie Spears left while everything had been funded and was being built, and he went to Minneapolis
right,
to be the director of parks there while we were building these facilities. It was curious. One time I went to visit him. The Holmston Ice Company was building the ice-making equipment for the ice rink. They were in Minneapolis, and so their home office, and the managers of the facility and I went through a tour, quick primer about learning how to take care of ice, make shave ice, create the ice rink floor, manage the bubbles and the bumps and things like that. And at the time, I went to visit Mr. Spears at his office. The people in Minneapolis in his office, I had no clue that I had a Southern accent.
Oh, I see.
Come listen to this guy talk. So, no, but he had a big influence. From that standpoint, we went on to the ice rink and the tennis center, were involved in the land swap with HCA.
Right.
Where we gave them the land that the ice rink and tennis center was on. They gave us the land of the old Ullman Construction Company that they owned,
which became was on your headquarters. Park Plaza. Right.
And they gave us, I think, $12 million as far as the business deal in the swap. Well, during the time between that we got the money, the city invested it and gained some interest. And they renovated everything at the old Ullman site. The maintenance area, their engineer building became our recreation building. The orange orchard stone office is one of the coolest buildings.
It's really beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It when we moved from over the little small office next to the train, every workspace was improved.
Sure.
And the addition of the Centennial Sportsplex, between the adding of the aquatic center plus the ice rink, was probably a contributing factor to national swim meets.
Sure.
Two days after we opened the aquatic center, we were on Wide World of Sports. We were part of a national swim meet going, U.S. swim going on, but they had a special race for the sprint.
With Matt Biondi and all these people were there. I remember that. Exactly.
The world record was in the heats involved in this one race was broken, set again, broken, and set again.
In the 50 freestyle. Yeah, right. Yeah. Wow. Well, that's still, I'm in that pool just about every morning, so it's still a beautiful pool. I guess in some respects it's not the top of the heap pool that
it
was.
It's every generation, every 4 or 5 years, they have something that's a little faster, that minimizes the wakes of in the water. And we still probably need, when I left 2 years ago, we had projected that we needed a $2 million upgrade for the pool facility. So
additional seating, you think?
Well, it's still, I think we still meet the requirement of 2,000 seats, and they may have changed that requirement, but we need to do an upgrade on the filtration.
I got you.
And the management of the weight.
Okay.
The water, the resistance of the water. So
isn't that interesting?
The racers, yeah.
Well, you know, it's all of that was kind of preliminary to me asking this. I mean, recreation as a public, as a function of our local government, has changed in philosophy so dramatically since you and I started in the late 70s.
Yes.
I mean, it at one point was, you know, kind of a free giveaway program to whoever showed up.
Yep.
Talk about that.
It the environment had to be changed inside the office and with the people overseeing it, because everything was geared toward free use of open space, free use of the community centers, and things of that nature. And it became expected to generate revenue. Now, we had, for the years that I was in charge of special services, we had the golf courses. And the golf courses were generating 4 to 6, and I think the last year that I was there, they were we were generating over $10 million in revenue between all of our revenue-generating aspects. Obviously, in Nashville, events, special events, we are permitting events on an ongoing basis in almost every park, whether it's a regional park or a small neighborhood park. East Park, for example. The Hot Chicken Festival on the 4th of July is one of the biggest events that we have, except for two blocks away, what's going on the 4th of July as well at the riverfront and the Send is probably a little bigger. And they've even changed the main concert on the 4th of July has gone to Bicentennial.
Right.
Because it was a mixed blessing for the people who ran all the businesses downtown. People would want to go out to listen to the concert on the 4th, and they would leave. There wouldn't be enough people coming into the businesses buying drinks, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So they thought it would be better to move, and so you could have the two celebrations.
So interesting to hear you talk about the focus on events, because events of that kind, there was the Italian Street Fair used to happen
in
Centennial Park.
The major ones we would have would be the Italian Street Fair, the Taka Craft Fair, the Steeplechase. For years, and those were the staple events.
Run by outside organizations.
Right. And you know, they would rent the space.
Right.
But we weren't applying any real thought about what that space was worth. Our attitude was a nominal fee.
Right.
And now we're particularly looking at the cost of the event from a maintenance standpoint and a cleanup standpoint, the security that needs to be provided at every event because of the things that are going on based on bombings at marathons and things like that. And the park under the regular budget couldn't be expected to handle those expenses. All of the expenses are being passed on to the people who have the event, and they are now getting used to those types of fees, which can be several thousand dollars.
Right.
But you bring several thousand people to the park, plus now every event, and I won't say every event, there's a large number of events that request alcohol.
Sure.
As part of the event. That's, you know, the general rule in the parks is the prohibited. Alcohol is prohibited. But now it's managed. And we have beer fests at Two Rivers Mansion and beer fests at Sevier at Sunnyside. and other the smaller neighborhood parks as well. So that's something the teetotalers sort of worry about occasionally, but you know, it's managed. It's they're people that when they sell alcohol, they have to have bartenders, they have to have insurance policies to cover the city as well. They have to have people monitoring those that are coming up to get beer and et cetera. It's just, it has to be managed, and we put that on the people that are hosting the
events. Got you. The city over the last, you know, 10 or 15 years has made a major investment in reworking the community centers.
Yep.
Talk about that. Now, I occasionally step inside the door over at the McCabe Center. Beautiful little place. Tell us about the thought that went involved with that.
Well, I probably have to go back to at the turn of the century. We were looking at our 100th year celebration of the existence of the parks in Nashville.
Gotcha.
And Jim Fike was still the director, and Bill Purcell was the mayor.
Okay.
And I think Jim, in his way, was thinking about, well, we need to have some sort of celebration. Well, the mayor suggested, and we implemented, a master plan to assess all of our facilities, to compare, to see, contrast what type of land needs that we had needed for Nashville.
For new parks.
For new parks. What types of new programs. And we just updated it, the master plan, in 2016. And we got it ratified by the council and the park board in 2017. The 2002 plan brought in larger regional type community centers with fitness centers, and a change in the environment, the way the people at the parks looked at it. They had always looked at community centers for basically seniors and kids. And in the community center,
And free for those people.
And
right.
There was not much of an attraction other than basketball for the adults, young adults, or adults between the senior citizens and kids. So we put wellness and fitness centers on the forefront. So every new center that's being built has some sort of weight training facility, some sort of classroom that can be used for aerobics classes, boot camps. The gyms are used for boot camps. And we're getting wellness to become a major part of our recreation product.
Yep.
When you combine that with putting in the greenway system that had come into our park system after the 2002 master plan, that was the best thing that happened to the urban and suburban part of Nashville, the greenway system. It's the best idea that has come along in the same 40 some odd years that I worked there.
The greenways. Okay.
Today, I mean, you know, it's still like where I live in Bellevue. I'm on the Harpeth River Greenway every day that it's not flooded, and during the week, and go to Warner Park and use the Red Trail during the weekend. But it is truly a ribbon that connects one park to another.
Sure enough.
And you can jump on the greenway, ride your bike, you can cross Old Harding, Highway 100, and go all the way to Warner Park.
I mean, I can remember when Shane Dennison was involved with getting those started.
Yep.
And am I right in saying that the first one that was there around Richland?
Now, I'm actually thinking the first mile that was built was in Bellevue.
Okay.
Between Charlie Tigard and Ronnie Stein. I don't know who
could
claim
area
to be the father of greenways, but Charlie was in
Richland
Bellevue.
Richland Creek.
And it was on the Harpeth.
Harpeth, okay.
It was on the Harpeth River from at Old Harding and went just a mile up Morton Mill Road and ended back at the river.
And now we have greenways laced all over the sand.
When I left, we had over 200. I think we had just added 85 miles. We'd gotten to 200, over 200 miles of greenways, and I think that may need to check that number.
Well, Tommy, what is the, I mean, that to me has always presented as a huge maintenance headache.
The boardwalks are, because okay. You have to manage the all around water, so you'll get some algae growth on the boardwalks and they'll get wet. Okay. And generally speaking, the people riding bikes may be going a little, you know, they say slow down when it's wet when you're driving your car. Right. They say to slow down when it's wet when you're riding your bike, but not too many people adhere to that recommendation.
So you guys just geared up to handle the pickup, the litter, and the...
Picking up the litter. Basically, it is like a swath around both sides of the paved path
right. That
you take care of. Right. And a lot of the maintenance is still done like a natural area. You let the trees may fall, then we cut them up and then just move them to the side right. And let them decay. From that standpoint, it becomes helps with water quality. And in the other aspect of it, it makes the people who live in the city, and I'm telling you, I'm a city boy, learn about nature and learn about the need to protect the resources that we have in this
great. You know, and we've had a really significant flood back in, was it 2010?
2010.
And we had a whole lot of areas sort of become declared unsuitable for habitation. They're in flood plains and subject to flooding. And the city got a bunch of new property.
A lot. FEMA, and one of the things that was particularly impressive with Mayor Dean made the contacts with the state and federal government and started to get federal help and request federal help. And he allowed the departments to start the cleanup process without overly managing them. But the intent was to look at the flood areas, to go to the places that really got hit hard, and to buy out, using federal funds, to buy out the property. England Park, it's on the Greenway, the Richland Creek Greenway.
Okay.
It was named after a couple that died in their house from the flood.
Oh, gee.
And but was created in between Charlotte and West Park, and by the taking down of the houses and creating the park. It was done in other parts of town, out in Bordeaux. Hamilton, West Hamilton was totally flooded, and we got property there, and we're extending the White's Creek Greenway along that. So, you know, the parkland historically is in floodplain area.
Sure, sure.
And so that was just adding to that. That was one of the ways they helped the suburban areas deal with the flood.
Sure enough. You know, the one of the things, too, we talked about the community centers being greatly expanded. You know, we've had a nature center function at Warner Park for many years, and now that has a beautiful new facility there. But we now have a couple additional nature centers.
We have several. I think we have four now. We have Bell's Bend.
Right.
We have Beeman Park. And we have one over
Shelby. Right.
And I know I'm not particularly aware of the plans at Ravenwood and at the new park in the southeast, but I think both of those parks are going to have...
Intending to have those.
And the Ravenwood Park is probably going to have an agricultural aspect of it to
really
it
it's like there, a community garden type of thing
yeah, there,
or something.
Well, there was a farm there
okay
that next to Ravenwood Golf Course that was purchased, the Lytle Farm, and it at some point they're going to cross the river with a bridge to the Peeler Park area. That is in Madison. That's in the at the end of Neely's Bend.
Fantastic.
Once they do that, the park out there with the combination of the connected park from Two Rivers Park to Ravenwood Park to the one in Madison that I just named, Peeler Park,
yes,
will be as large as Warner Park.
Oh, gee.
Yeah.
All combined. Wow.
And there'll be access from one to the other to the other.
Now, is it the Peeler area that was acquired during the Dean administration?
Yes.
Yes, I remember that. It was really significant purchase.
Now, Ravenwood and the Lytle Farm was acquired during the Dean administration, as well as the Southeast Park.
Fantastic.
That they're developing as well.
You know, you and I have talked many times, and we both sort of come out of an athletic background. My dad, you know, working as an athletic director and that sort of stuff, and I grew up in that. Started in Parks and Recreation, and that was what I was naturally
inclined to do.
Talking about the nature centers leads me to ask, tell me about your growth in your thinking about the importance of the outdoors and nature.
Well, I touched on it coming from being a city boy.
Right.
I wasn't basically in touch with nature. You know, I saw the grass that needed to be cut, things
right.
of that nature.
Right.
That is probably the biggest learning experience and made my career enjoyable. I had this lifelong awareness of things that I hadn't been aware of, particularly in tune with as a youngster. We were talking about honeysuckle earlier when
sure.
we were outside.
Sure.
And I probably thought, oh man, honeysuckle is great. Right. I had no clue that it was an invasive. It was similar to kudzu.
Right.
And now I've been, you know, thankfully from people like Bob Parrish, I've learned so much from these folks. And you know, the impact on me is now I'm more aware of what's going on worldwide, nationally with what's going on with the natural park areas and et cetera that the new administration is looking at. I think.
Well, I know that you've been involved in, you know, professional society, TRPA and NRPA, as a professional person. Do you think that is a mindset that really is becoming part of what a local park and recreation department is supposed to be?
I think it is.
Yeah.
We can't deal with the social aspect of it alone. And that is one of the things, probably from the sports and the social aspect, good for people. We provide things that are good for people, activities that are good for people, participating in wellness programs. Well, also having clean water, healthy air to breathe, et cetera, it's all kind of ties in to good for people. And it's just become aware of it. I think, you know, most people my age at one point, but one way or another, they were trusting progress to take care of all of our problems, or they were questioning progress and what it's doing to create our problems.
Where do you think the city is heading in terms of parks and recreation now?
I think it's in a holding pattern, and
that
really concerns me.
Okay.
One of the ideas that the Barry administration had was to do a series of plans for the city from the standpoint that we did a update of our parks and greenways master plan. At the same time, they were doing the sidewalk and bikeability walkability plans of Nashville. They had the transit plan that was being assessed during the same time. And all of these plans were basically finalized and presented to the mayor, to the various boards, whether it be the planning commission with Nashville Next, the transit folks. And there was, I think there was a $1.5 billion price tag for our master plan. Well, the transit plan ended up being $5 to $10 billion.
Right.
Depending on who you talk to right. at the time. And I think people are overwhelmed. Now, with and the one thing that concerns me with the shuffle from the new mayor's administration, that the finance people might not necessarily have a handle on what is coming in and the development of the city moving forward. The budget situation with the Nashville Metro Parks Department, they had an unprecedented requirement. They had a council, they had a budget approved by the council, but the finance department has them cutting $1.5 million inside this budget that was approved by the council, because I don't think they have a handle on correctly
anticipating revenues.
You know, they and the tough deal, and then this is
so it's kind of a sequestration of appropriated money,
yep.
just in case the tax money is not enough to pay.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I think most elected officials figure that there's some sort of template that provides funding for the government. With Nashville expanding, you know, you would think with all the condos and apartments and the buildings going up downtown and the relocation of corporations to the Gulch and around the basic areas that are being, they're evolving on a daily basis, that money, the excess money, the increase property taxes and the amount of people buying, going shopping and eating in restaurants, et cetera,
right.
et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But that money sales would taxes, flow in right. to expand the money would come in proportion to be distributed out to the departments, and they're not growing. And that's a concern. And you know, Mayor Briley is a good man and a smart guy, but he's been given a tough situation. And moving forward,
because there's been a lot of promises made based upon yeah. that assumption that the revenue is always going to be there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, pay plans were backed out on by the government because of the budget situation. Monique Odom, who's the director of the Parks Department, I've apologized to a dozen times for leaving when I did, because I had no clue that you know, the mayor would be ousted and that we would have the financial situation that we have. And it just was, you know, I felt like it was a bad time for me to leave, but I wasn't going to impact any of that anyway.
Well, you were, as I recall, getting back to more of a personal thing about you, were kind of reluctant to take that job in the first place, weren't you?
Well, Did you ever know Kurt Garrigan?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
When Jim,
who was a reporter for the Nashville Scene,
Liz
was his wife was a reporter. Kurt was a landscape architect and a planning guy.
I think he was with the Historical Commission, and at about the time we did the master plan, Kurt, we were renovating the Parthenon, and Lally Richter was struggling taking care of those projects.
All right, so Lally was the head of development for the city parks.
And
right.
maintenance.
Okay.
And so Kurt came in to help finish the Parthenon. And Lally retired. Kurt ended up taking his place. And there must be a gene that park planners have. Because Kurt was very knowledgeable and very, very,
very
smart,
talented guy.
Very talented
yeah,
guy.
Absolutely.
The planners are bright people But sometimes they don't want to be recreation people. They want to be landscape architects or historic architecture folks, architects. And Kurt and I had talked when Jim Fike retired. We were both kind of ambitious and both thinking about applying for the job, but we didn't want to fracture the department when Jim left, and we wanted to have it move forward seamlessly. So at the time, I had been in Jim's old position, and I had been on a track from the bottom of the parks department towards the top, and we discussed if I was going to apply, and I told him I was. And so he talked to the park board, and he said he wouldn't apply, but he'd be willing to be the interim director when Jim left. I applied. I was the last local person involved in the process, but Roy Wilson was chosen from Houston,
right.
And I went back to my old job. Jump forward 6 years later, when Roy was leaving Nashville to go to DeKalb County, he and I talked again, and at this point,
Kurt and I talked again and
discussed that process. At the time that we discussed it, when Roy was leaving, I had no intention of applying for it because I was thinking about retirement.
Well, that was what I was thinking about.
I was close to retirement age. I was already 60. And Kurt had been additionally appointed in Mayor Purcell's last year as the deputy mayor.
Right.
And that was interesting. Kurt was actually Roy Wilson's supervisor and then came back to the parks department. And their relationship turned a little chilly after
oh,
that.
Gee.
So anyhow, long story short, I accepted the interim job, but before they put the application process out, Kurt got a job with the UN doing climate study in Paris.
I didn't know what his job was. I knew he'd moved overseas.
And so in 2010, when I became the interim director, 6 months later, we had the flood. And I guess it was baptism by water. It seemed baptism by fire. Parts of the city were totally devastated.
Oh, absolutely.
And parts of the city were totally normal. And I think I made a lot of headway with the elected officials, the park board as well, for what I did and how I handled myself during the flood situation.
During the crisis situation, right.
So at first I had to agree that I wouldn't apply for the job, but after the flood hit, a couple of months later, the HR director at the time appeared to the park board and goes, "Well, you did something illegal when you told Mr. Lynch he could be the interim director and he couldn't apply for the permanent full-time job."
Oh, okay.
And circumstances changed. So I ended up applying for the full-time job, got it in 2012, and stayed for 5 years.
Terrific. Let me ask you about a couple subjects that come to mind. We've talked about natural resources and, the need for, open space and, nature study, et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't really talked about cultural resources. And Nashville, you have Three Rivers Mansion. You have Fort Negley, which is an incredible important site.
Fort Nashborough.
Down at the riverfront.
Several historic, the city cemetery is a joint responsibility between us and the historic commission. Their offices.
Y'all keep the grass cut over there? Is
well,
that
we have now arrangement. I think they're still where we pay for it and they hire.
Okay.
But historic areas have been troublesome because it's tough getting funding. I mean, everybody will go, "Oh, this needs to be there." I got cursed out by two mayors because of two forts.
Okay.
One, Mayor Dean looked at the old telephone pole created Fort Nashboro, and it was falling apart. Right. It had become a haven for homeless folks downtown. It was an eyesore and dangerous.
Tommy, when that was built, it was wrong.
Well, it was the...
We built it out of creosoted telephone poles. And it was a toxic hazard for anybody that worked in there.
And it wasn't in the right place.
Right.
It wasn't anything symbolic of the design.
Okay. I'm glad we agree about that.
We had $1 million to replace this creosote-soaked telephone pole short. And
but that with the, that consistently got busloads full of visitors,
school kids,
right?
And the new fort is more open, it is more hospitable for use downtown. Ultimately, we're going to have the touch pads for the kids in the classes to get more educational information, but we had a design that was almost $2 million, and there was a couple of years that we couldn't get it built because we couldn't get it funded. Mayor Dean was adamant, and the finance director, Mr. Reveling, at the time, we gave you $1 million, and that's all you had.
Okay.
And the planners dreamed. Fortunately, at the time, we had built the Ascend Amphitheater. And the Ascend Amphitheater, even though it was a huge budget and a huge facility and a big addition to downtown, we saved almost $600,000 from the budget to build it, and were able to use it since it was in the same park to complete Fort Nashboro. So the next time I got cursed because of a park was coincidentally, I was coming back from Memphis that I'd just gotten the TRPA Fellow Award.
Okay.
I was sort of on a high. Got back in town on a Thursday morning and got a call from Mayor Berry. And a general curse word was used. What the H is going on at Fort Negley?
Right.
I'm just in town. Nobody's talked to me. I had no clue.
So my listeners need to know that Fort Negley is the remains of a prominent Union fort that was occupied by the Union Army during the Civil War on a hilltop called Cloud Hill in South Nashville. So
I don't think there ever was a gun fired from the fort. That is in dispute.
Okay.
And we have a history center as part of the fort.
Right.
We had a friends group, and the friends of Fort Negley the worked with another support group that were basically reenactors, but they're parts of the Sons of the Confederacy.
Okay.
And our staff and the friends group kept coming to us. They were afraid that they were going to have a rebel takeover of the Union fort.
Well, what did Mayor Berry have on her mind when she called you?
Well, she had on her mind that trees had been cut. We had been removing underbrush up there.
Honeysuckle
For several years, and we had just used a very environmentally friendly a bunch of goats taking out the underbrush. They had done their job, and we had decided internally, the same way we had done at other places, we'd had a master plan for Fort Negley, and it had a master plan that recommended removal of trees to reestablish the view sheds that you would have seen from the fort back in the wartime.
Right.
Well, the problem is we removed the trees, and you know, it was made out to be more of a devastating move than it actually was,
right,
because we were totally planning on planting other trees to replenish the trees that we took out. But the communication wasn't there.
Right.
The communication internally wasn't there for whatever reason. The folks underneath Monique and myself decided, well, if Tommy needs to know, we'll let him know. And I was out of town, and they didn't let me know, and I got a surprise when I got back. I had to fall on a sword a few times for that. And then that became...
There was a homeless encampment,
yes,
also,
yes,
which was part of that,
yes,
mess.
And that we had multiple mayors. Mayor Dean had talked to us about closing the homeless camp, and Mayor Berry knew of our plans to close the homeless camp, and the social services knew of our plans to close the homeless camp. But when it came time to close the homeless camp, everybody goes, no, you can't do it.
Oh, gee.
I was interviewed by the news, and we talked about our shared Catholic,
sure,
education.
Sure.
I would be standing with looking past the news person, and I would see the school buses lined up to go to the Adventure Science Center. The entrance to the homeless camp was on the back near their parking lot. And it was one of the largest crime scene areas in Nashville. There were assaults, robberies, and ongoing throughout the year. And, you know, we were so fortunate no child got loose from a school teacher. And you can't say, oh, we were fortunate that it was crimes of homeless on homeless.
But
it wasn't camping. Our maintenance men were facing health threats every day, from trash bags filled with feces,
needles,
yes, et cetera.
Exactly, right.
And they got industrious, and I got called to the principal's office about it. I can't say anything else about it. Moving forward, then we ran into another issue about plans to what to do after the Sounds have moved to their new place, and what to do with Greer Stadium and what to do with it afterwards.
Right.
There was a you know, in actuality, and I can say this now, the process may not have been met according to the purchasing normal process, but the people involved in the initial proposal to do something at Greer Stadium had a sound proposal, a really cool concept, and plus money. The property was going to stay with the city. It was going to be park property, but it would be having a development on it.
Right.
The green space of the old ball field would stay as a green space, an open field area, and they would pay money that would be going on an annual basis to continually upgrade and update the fort itself.
Right.
And you know, from the little standpoint that I have, I just thought, well, you know, in actuality of the history of that space, baseball and softball had been played there longer than the war had gone on there or anything else.
Right.
And it, particularly a Civil War site, a Union site in a southern city, brings up the old bad connotation, the bad feelings of the South and the North.
Sure.
And I hope as they move forward on the plans of it that they consider that, because if nothing else, if it becomes just a Civil War site, it'll become the continuous conflict over the South will rise again versus, hey, the the Union was preserved.
Yeah, well, the history of that site, I mean, there's been two or three different renovations of the thing, only to have it be abandoned again.
The WPA. So, yeah, exactly. And now, from the historical aspect of the site that the Greer was left on, it comes from more of the WPA. And I know the discussion, I'll ask you this. The discussion came up at the time about how many slaves died in building the fort. And that is a concern because they weren't in.
And where are they buried?
Yeah, where are they buried?
Right.
But the thing is pertaining to the treatment of freed slaves, the people from the North blamed the freed slaves for their uncles and cousins and brothers being in a war and being maimed and killed as much as the people from the South blame.
It's a ball of wax, freed slaves.
Yeah. No, and I would, if anything comes up of it, I would like to see it become an honor to the military of America, some sort of park that people can walk around and see, because it actually was something the military of the United States got and minimized the Civil War aspect of it and maximized the honoring the fallen dead and things, the people that served our country.
Changing subjects, you know, Centennial Park in Nashville is a historic site in itself. I mean, it's a beautiful open space park, but we have, you know, the Parthenon and, but, you know, I can remember when I first came to Nashville, that property was so laced with roads and roads that didn't go anywhere, and people were parking sort of informally just on the grass, and you mentioned Lolly Richter. Mr. Richter had his own little plan about how he was reorganizing and little bit by little bit so that no one would notice the incremental change that he was making to kind of have it be more people friendly.
Well, that was directed by Jim Fike.
Okay.
And let me tell you how Fike explained it. And of course, you know, Lally, the first time he listened to Jim talk about it, he goes, "Lally, we need to get people off the street. We need to put things like cart paths." Jim went from his golf background.
Okay.
And, you know, you can go parallel to the street and go inside the street and separate the cars from the walkers and joggers. And all you got to do is put a cart path down, something 6 feet wide and asphalt. And of course, Lally, the first response, "That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Right. You're just putting more asphalt in there." Right.
But he realized we had made this park adapt to cars. And you know, the cars were going two ways and the one way. And we're still updating that park with a master plan.
Which is why I asked the question. Tell us more about that.
Well, they're getting ready to, I don't know exactly where they are. The Conservancy, when Mayor Dean started this program of updating the Centennial Park Master Plan, it was intended that the city put money up, but a private-public partnership, because, you know, this park was important to Vanderbilt, is important to HCA, and aside from the just citizens, the students at Vanderbilt are there all the time.
Right.
The HCA employees are right there, and, you know, at times they're parking they'll park in the parking lots in the park instead of their place.
Right.
And we're having to assess that. We're even looking at paid parking and having fewer parking spaces in the park and fewer people bringing their cars in, park at the Sportsplex. And at some point that we might be working, the parks may work with MDHA about development of parking garages, because MDHA has their high rise right there on the western end of Centennial, and if we could put a parking garage where some of the tennis courts are, maybe put tennis courts on top of it at the Sportsplex, we can get cars out of the Centennial property.
Exactly.
And get the cars to, you know, if you're using the Sportsplex, it would be free. But if you're not, there would be some paid aspect.
Sure.
And the parking in Nashville is tough at best. And for us to have free parking where there doesn't need to be free anymore, they could be opening it up to recreational space. I think we missed one opportunity with HCA. I suggested to the mayor's office under the Dean administration that we talk to HCA about another land donation or land swap and have somehow get Centennial Park out to Charlotte.
Oh boy.
Because of the development of Charlotte and the amount of houses, and HCA up until a few months ago had just vacant land over at Charlotte.
Yeah, and there's railroad tracks there too, so that makes sense.
Yeah, but the HCA already had something built over the railroad tracks.
Okay,
where
okay.
They got permission from CSX that we could have expanded.
Over there, wow.
I thought that would be cool because Centennial is getting smaller and smaller and smaller because the density of the population. You know, they're building hotels over there and high rises. And it's going to end up getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Well, it's a jewel, you know. As you said, you know, when the park was done, was designed, there were no cars.
And the reflecting pond for the Parthenon, and the only exact replica of the Parthenon in the world.
Were you involved with the Cockrell Spring redevelopment?
Yeah, that was the first phase
right. Of
the master plan, and reopening Cockrell Spring was part of it. You can't get the old oak where the soldiers met at the Natchez Trace. It used to be there.
The terminus of the Natchez Trace.
Opening that up. Having the music that's going on down there on a regular basis, and made that an active part of the park that hadn't been. It'd been a view shed to look past as you drive by West End
exactly. To
look at the Parthenon.
Exactly.
But now with the lights and the stage and the walking paths and the spring opened up, it's a much more usable space.
Tommy, I have to say, and we've gone just an hour. Which is unbelievable. It goes very quickly. We're going to have to wind it up, but I have to say that you're still enthusiastic.
I love the park system. I think I told you, I go there almost every day. I'm using the greenways in Bellevue, and I still hit Warner Park almost every weekend. That was one of the things when I retired, I never thought I would ever quit using the parks.
Right.
I used to go to the Sportsplex at lunchtime and work out when my kids were younger so that I wouldn't put my workout. I would work an hour longer, but I wouldn't put my workout after I got home so I could be active with all three of my kids.
Right.
So, and also, my dad died at an early age. He died at 57. So not smoking and exercising and doing the right things became a passion of mine. Late in life, about the time I turned 40, but that was the time I realized the old Mickey Mantle way of if I'd known I'd been this long, I'd been kinder and nicer to myself. It kind of kicked in.
Well, Tommy, thank you so much for spending this time with us. We probably have another hour or more worth of things to talk about, but I think people have a limit to what they can sit and listen to.
The joke at the park office was I like to hear the sound of my voice.
Tommy, thank you so much.
Mark,
great to have
enjoyed
you.
It. Thank
right.
you.